Political science, combined with English language, open you to a world of opportunities to analyze and communicate about government, policy, and civic participation through writing, research, and critical thinking. This interdisciplinary approach develops skills to understand complex social issues and express informed perspectives. How does one leverage such a background to join the world of tech in the cloud and product management? In this episode, we sit with Nanajwa Inim as she walks us through her transition into tech and how she has occupied different roles since she began. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to the TechSurf podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cluche, and today we have a lady who likes to call herself the dynamic and passionate product manager. Today I have Nanajwa to come and have a great discussion around her pivoting careers journey. I wouldn't want to do too much of a long intro. I'd just like to get into today's conversation right away. So Nanajwa, thank you so much for making time to join today's episode of the TechSurf podcast.
Yeah. Hello, Ray. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to share my story.
Perfect. I'm sure a lot of people are going to glean from it and learn a thing or two. Yeah. Okay, so if you can, in the shortest amount of time, you know, introduce yourself, your background, who you are, a little bit of everything, and then we can get into the juice of today's conversation.
Right. All right. So my name is Nanajwa Inim, and I moved from international affairs. I moved from a non-technical background into tech way back in 2020. Personally, I like to dance. When I'm not studying, I like to dance because it helps me just release a lot of tension. And I love mentoring people, speaking to people. So, yeah, having me here is such a great honor.
Yeah. Amazing. I wish it was a video recording so that we could see a few dance moves, but we will save that for later. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your growing up, obviously from the title, we're talking about pivoting careers from international relations, political science into a rather, into the tech industry. Now let's backtrack a little bit into political science, international relations. Would you say you were one of those who were in the debating club who were like, I'm going to fight for the rights of people, I'm going to do this? So all throughout, that was what your parents thought you were going to do, or it just came, the interest was built up along the way?
Yeah, so I'll say that I was born into a family of four. The three girls, all of us did general arts. So, the normal Ghanaian era, you do the general arts, literature, history. Mm. But I was more into the diplomacy side because I wanted to be a diplomat. I wanted to help, part of the UN, help take away hunger, in the world and all that stuff. So that's where I found myself doing more things, engaging in volunteering activities and all that before I made the move. So I'll say that I grew up into it because that's what I was used to, but joining political science actually gave me a different view of helping people. And that's how I got into international affairs, which I think we'll talk about later on. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you did general arts, probably, I'm sure it's, history was in there, here and there. Now you're choosing a course, you come to university and then you're choosing what you want to study. Yeah. Why did you zone into political science?
All right. So to be very honest, I'll say I didn't really have an option. know, like, an option. I didn't know what I wanted to really do coming out of SHS. And because I had done, like, general arts, I didn't want to do law. I mean, so I just chose. So political science was more of my first choice. I'll tell you that at that time, I was just choosing something that will, like, an easy to go with something for me, like, more like that. So that's how I got into political science. But then I did English as well. So I just wanted to be able to do, like, communicate and speak to people and all that. So I did political science with English. That's how come I got into political science. So,
all right. And political science with English, maybe you were thinking about joining the National Keiko. Maybe that was the, yeah, so tell me that, yeah. Yeah, so tell me, like, what was, like, the end goal for you reading political science and English?
Right. Yeah. So reading political science and English, like I said, for English I wanted to be more of, like, communicator. For political science, that's where my passion for international affairs grew. So I wanted to be a diplomat because I did a course in international affairs and I was so excited about it. So that's what the end goal was, to be a diplomat, travel around the world, help people and all that.
Okay. And okay, that's fine, that's fine. And along the line, did you by any chance do any IT course when you were in university? Did you go for any boot camp? Where did all of a sudden the interest in tech, you know, spring from?
Yeah, thank you so much for that, because I get that question a lot. Funny enough, I never did IT when I was in SHS. I mean, when I was in the university. I actually zoomed into tech in 2020 October during the lockdown, right?
Okay.
And everybody was, I mean, home. We didn't have anything to do.
Right.
And I've always wanted to learn something else. I mean, move into tech. But, you know, I don't like maths. Let me put it that way. So, you know, sometimes, like, you hear tech and you're seeing the code and everything. You're like, no, this is me. Yeah. But I remember I saw the AWS Restart program and I wanted to hop on. A friend sent it to me. So I casually, let me use the word, I casually applied because I thought, I mean, I might not get in, but I went through and I had my first class on 19th October. I love to keep dates. That's how I got there. Yeah.
All right. So coming from a non-tech background, two backgrounds that are very heavy on talking and English language. So English language is, you know, is an ingredient in your international relations work, right? How was that shift for you? Because COVID, I'm sure COVID was a good time for a lot of people to learn skills, but I know that sometimes getting into tech is not a very straightforward path, especially for people who have not done anything that is very tech related. How was that for you? What did you start with?
Yeah, so like I said, I started off with the AWS Restart program. I'll say that it really wasn't easy because at that time I was combining my master's, doing my thesis, and then this course. It wasn't easy for me at all. But then what helped me was, it was more like a structured class where you go for a virtual class from morning to evening. Trust me, my first class, I don't know what I learned. I didn't learn anything because I was scared. We had people from different places that had really learned a lot and then had the tech skill, but it was difficult. Like, let me just be honest. It was, but I leveraged networking people in my class. I mean, messaging people to help me understand this. I mean, Python, I don't get it. Help me and all that. So that's how I was able to pull through. Yeah. At a point, I had a mental breakdown. I took 3 days off and I just came
back. Oh, wow. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that, because people don't really talk about mental health in the tech space and how one goal for my podcast is for people to see the humanity part of tech, because people like to talk about tech and talk about it as if it's heaven on earth, you know, the money, the MacBook Pro, the everything and everything. But no one talks about the lonely days, you being behind a bug and everything. Let's talk a little bit about your mental health and especially the bar of entry into tech being high, especially, I know it's quite saturated at the moment. How did you navigate that? What did you have to get some form of counseling, or you just were open with your mentors or your friends?
Right. So I remember during that time, I was combining my master's with this. And, you know, you write your thesis, your supervisor has to mark it. And I remember the last, my chapter three, my supervisor just returned it with, I'll just say the whole work was cancelled. I was like, what? That was when I knew that something was up, you know.
Right.
I felt that evening, I really cried myself to sleep because I was confused that, is this master's worth it? Or is this tech worth it? Because even for the tech, you're not even assured of a job afterwards, right? But at least for the international affairs, I've had some travel experience with these in relation to that, right?
Mm.
So I was really down, and especially going into class and seeing Greek. I mean, when I mean Greek, not
yeah, literally, what is Greek right. Taught,
right? So I leveraged, my instructors were very helpful. I spoke to them, and then we had a career coach. I spoke to my career coach as well, and then a couple of friends I had made in the class. I just spoke to them, told them how I was feeling, and honestly, the break I took was not my idea, and trust me, it was something I felt like I didn't know I needed. So my one of my instructors told me, "All right, I'm going to give you 3 days off. Don't come to class. I mean, just take the 3 days off." Reset, talk to your lecturer about it, everything, and then come back. So then I took that 3 day off. I wasn't going to class, and trust me, it helped me so much just to be able to realign my values, what I wanted to do, get a whole understanding of what is expected of me. I think one issue that caused this thing was I was taking in too much, you know, trying to make it all at once. And I think that's one thing people moving into tech must understand. You can't get it within 3 months, right? And I was just like second month into it, and I was trying to get everything. That's what confused me and made me, I mean, just break down and all that. But yeah, in the end, it felt good.
All right, so on the back of, you know, having gone through such a very critical time, you know, on your mental health and everything, let's talk about the skills that, you know, make you the product manager that you are today. And maybe let's talk a little bit about empathy. You know, how has, you know, having come from a background that is not tech, now you're currently a product manager. We'll delve into more of the details of what your work is, but let's talk, since you brought the conversation around mental health, how has that, you know, played a role in your work as a product manager today?
Right. So, I think my previous experiences in volunteering has helped a lot, especially in the international relations phase, because I got to work with a lot of people from different backgrounds, and especially working with people to build solutions. You know, international affairs, you're trying to, how do we solve poverty? How do we solve this? And then you get to be on the field, at least from my experience, you get to be on the field. You get to understand how these people are feeling. You get to travel to remote places, right? Just to understand how things are going. So for me, I think that's what has helped me have empathy when I'm building as a product manager, because I understand the need of building what people actually need and not just building something actually very like fancy and all that. So just having the people in mind, having their needs at heart, even from an international affairs standpoint, to product management, has been like a game changer for me. It's been more like an easy flow. I'm just able to flow in easily.
Okay. Now, amongst many industries you could have gotten into, international relations, so first political science and English, international relations, one would say the closest thing in tech you can get to is project management, or become a manager, or blah, 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 and, you know, become a bit of, you know, the liaison between, you know, tech companies and everything. So maybe more of the soft skill stuff. And then you choose to do product management. What led you into product management? Because even prior, you were talking about AWS and you talk about product management. It's like, what is this girl cooking? Is Nanajua cooking? There's too much in this, like too many ingredients here. What? So let's first talk about product management, because I'm sure that is what you
you identify yourself as, you identify yourself as a product manager, not as an AWS architect or analyst or whatever it is. Right. What led you to zone into product management?
All right. Okay. So what led me into product management first was my passion to get into the building phase. Because I wanted to be part, you know, project management, I mean, you're coordinating the teams, but with product, you're more like driving the force or driving the direction for the product. So I wanted to be part of that. And I'd say moving from, even in cloud, the cloud industry, we have product managers, you know, just people that, that help to build the product for users. So I'm still a cloud girl. I mean, I still have the cloud and all, but I'm more of also leveraging the cloud to also build products for people. So the reason I got into product is being part of the process, not just being directing the people, being involved in this is what is needed. I mean, helping the engineering team, design team, build what people actually want and not everything. So one thing, again, that I just to add to that is that you are allowed to just fly around everywhere and see what really flows with you. Because I've been a DevOps engineer before, I've been a cloud trainer before, but I settled on cloud and product manager because I felt this is what I want to do. Even if it's in the cloud, this is what I want to do. People feel like if I start with this, I must end with this, but that's not the case. Feel free to reinvent yourself at any point in time.
Wow.
Hello there, tech surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at the Tech Surf podcast and LinkedIn, the Tech Surf podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your daily activity as a product manager. What does that look like? You know, run us through your daily routine.
Okay, so my daily routine is I work in a startup, so it's very fast-paced. So I have my morning stand-up usually. And then sometimes I had to meet the design team. So that's how it looks. And being the design team, we have like a design review. We look at what we are building, just progress and how things are going. And then I also meet my engineering team as well, where we get to like have an update, do some testing, usability testing and all that. I also make sure that I have meetings with stakeholders as well. Just to discuss like how we are doing, maybe decisions on how the product should move based on feedback I've had from users and all that. And then I'd also go ahead and have like more like a focus time, you know, product management, there's a lot of documentation. So there's this thing people say that product managers are found in almost every meeting. Trust me, that's true. Because if you don't take care, you find yourself in every meeting and by the end of the day, you look and then you don't really have anything done, but there are a lot of things you need to do. So what I try to do is at least have about 2 hours of focus time for myself where I do not engage in any meetings, just to have work on my PRDs, create maybe user flows or wireframes for my design team and all that. So it's pretty much really a lot hectic because I'm in a startup and we are building, we build so fast, you know, we build them fast. So there's a lot of pressure, but that's how my day looks like. A lot of meetings and then focus times for doing what I have to do. Yeah.
All right. So how would you say your non-tech background has played a huge role in your current tech career?
Right. So I think that my non-tech background, first thing is that it actually pushed me to learn more because I felt like I'm coming from a non-technical background, so I need to do double the work. That's what I always say, because you're going to compete with people that already are in the tech field already, right? So it's always been like a motivating factor for me, just moving into that. And then secondly, I'll say my communication, because you know, like English, international affairs, you're always communicating. You need to find the right words. I mean, diplomacy. You can't just go away and just talk anyhow, right? So that's something that has also helped me, and then teamwork as well. So my journey, my non-technical background, honestly, has 50% leverage. I've leveraged more on that into my tech field. Yeah.
That is great. Now, you did mention that you coming from a non-technical background means you have to do double the work. Every time people hear about pivoting careers, they have this idea of, oh, it's hard, but she did it, so it's probably easy and everything. But then sometimes the details, like you said, it was challenging. Mm-hmm. If you can walk us through, I know you've already mentioned about your mental health and all that kind of stuff, but I want us to now zone into product management. What were some of the detailed challenges you were facing when you were transitioning fully into this role?
Yeah, so I think the first thing was lack of resources. I know you might say that, yeah, a lot of things on YouTube, and that's the challenge, right? You go online, you find a lot of things, and then you're consuming a lot, and finding what you really need to consume becomes very tiring on its own. So that's one thing. The lack of resources. And then secondly was just getting the experience, because you know, in the tech field, people hardly hire people that are enthusiasts, right? You just can't be an enthusiast and they'll say, oh, I want to hire you. You need to build the skills, right? So trying to even build the products, trying to have like projects down that you want to do, means you do the extra work. Meaning if I have to sit down after work hours, try to reach out to people on LinkedIn. I mean, I did a lot of things before I got to this side, right? But if you guys talk about the challenges, trying to get people to sometimes even like respond to you, to your emails, just to learn from them was a challenge. Getting the products or the projects that you need to do to be able to land the role was quite challenging. And consuming a lot of things online, I was consuming almost everything, and it was getting me more confused. You know, you just consume everything you see on the internet, and that's a real big challenge for everybody moving into tech or even into product management.
So you have been in the product management space for some time. You would think it's not too long, but it is. You know, in fact, I believe if you've done more than 6 months, you've done some time, right? Yeah. What are your top five skills you think makes one a good product manager? You can maybe do a personal reflection, or maybe on your mentors, anything.
So I think the first thing is being a communicator, because teams progress thrive on communication. So I'd say it's, for me, the first thing is being a communicator, communicating what needs to be built to your team is important, and communicating to your users to understand what they really need is another thing. Also communication. So that's one of the major things that you should be able to have. And also empathy. I mean, we spoke about empathy, understanding them. You wouldn't want to build something that people won't use. You don't want to build something that people might not have like good access to, or might not see the use. So that's that. And also I know that sometimes they say that you don't need to be technical to know, like, to be in a product management space, but it would be nice to just have, like, a nice knowledge of how some things work, right? That's one thing that has helped me for my cloud space, because I have been able to understand some of the things that are being communicated, even if it's UI, UX. I don't need to design, but if they say something and I can flow with them, it helps me communicate, and then it helps us to move in the right direction, right? And then research. So I'll say the market research, understand the markets and the market trends you are getting into, because you need to build something that will have a competitive edge or a competitive advantage over the other product. You can't just build what everybody is building. What will make somebody use your product other than another person's product? That's where you should be able to find your catch and then your niche. So did I say five or four? I don't remember, but that's yes.
I think you gave five. Maybe you have another one in there. I don't know. Well, floating. A bonus.
On top of my head, maybe nothing, but I'm continuous learning. Continuous learning is a skill, because there's always something new that you need to learn about. Even in this era of AI, generative AI, trust me, product management, you need to be on top of your game, because you need to understand, okay, this is the trend. How can we leverage that? How can we leverage that into, you don't have to build the AI into the product, but look at the trend and see how you can tweak or build your product to meet that space. Yeah.
Amazing. Now, you did say you love mentorship, and I'm sure you are a product of mentorship yourself. Tell me how your mentorship journey has been and how that has affected you to be a better mentor.
So I'd say I'm a proud member of MentorMesh.
Okay.
And it's a mentorship group for young people in tech and all that. For me, mentorship, I've learned that mentorship is more of a community thing. It's not just a one-on-one something. That's what my mentor, MJ Taylor, taught me. So mentorship is people helping you and you helping people. It's a community thing, right? And for me, what helped me was I had to reach out to people on LinkedIn. And the caveat there was, one thing I learned was that, let me tell you a personal story. So I reached out to someone.
We love personal stories.
Yeah. So I remember I reached out to one person on LinkedIn, and I was like, oh, I read your article and I want you to become my mentor. And he was like, oh, I don't know if I really have time to mentor you. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, but if you have any questions, feel free to DM me. I was like, okay, that's good. So that's why I learned my lesson, that people might be scared of the be my mentor sort of thing, right? But this is what I did. I started asking questions. I started like, maybe, oh, this is what I've read. How could you help me? This is what I've read. How can you help me? How could you do this and all that? And they kept answering, right? They kept like always answering me. And then they saw the dedication that I had. So if I want to hop on a coffee chat with any of my mentors, they are happy to do that with me, because they see the effort. People don't like it if you're not putting in the effort and then you just come like, oh, be my mentor. Right. I mean, it doesn't work that way. You get it. So that's what I leverage on, and it's helped me a lot. Anytime I'm having a hard time at work, I'll just have to go to LinkedIn. I mean, send them a DM. Like, oh, this is what is happening. And then they're always willing and always available to help me at every point in time. That's one thing that has helped me in my sort of mentorship. I've had like amazing, I don't have one mentor, let me just put it that way. Like, it's just like a general field. I love mentorship. They've helped me grow. My mentors have always been available to help me in every point in time. So what I learn from them is what I'm able to give out. You know, what I learned from them is, because they make time for me, I try as much as possible that, okay, if anybody wants to get into tech or move into a career, I'm able to help. And thankfully, I've had like people that have secured roles. I mean, at least from one or two meetings that we've had with them. So mentorship is good.
That's nice. I like how you ended. You talk about how you've been able to help people secure roles and mentorship and everything. Based on your little experience, what do you think are some of the barriers that affect people getting into tech, especially coming from a non-tech background?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is learning alone for a long time, because that's what I used to do. So my mentor mentioned that you need to build in public. You need to learn and build in public. You need to learn and build in public, because that is what will make people see what you are doing. I can't say that, oh, I'm getting into tech, but the question is, what have you done? Do you get it? So that's one thing I always try and try to tell the people I come into contact with, that start posting on LinkedIn. I mean, you don't have to be perfect. I mean, LinkedIn, it's not for perfect people.
Mm-mm.
Post, even if it's something you worked on, just post. So I think that's one thing I've helped. I've just told them about building in public, reaching out to people as well. Let people know you want the job. I know that it might be hard and you might feel like, why am I putting myself
You're doing out? Too much.
Exactly. But bro, we are talking about the job. You need a job, right? So get the job. like that, right? So put it out there that you need it. Let people see your skill. Try as much as possible to learn. Invest in learning. Because if you don't invest in learning, nobody is willing to help you. And nobody is willing to hire you. Yeah.
That is amazing. I know you said you work in a startup, and I don't need details about, you know, the work you're doing. But I'm just curious, what any interesting product that you're working on, or anything that you've worked on in the past that you can let us into, maybe a bit of the tools you use, the process, the timeline, just for someone who's listening to know what it is like to be a product manager.
Yeah, so I'd say one of my personal projects that always brings me joy was one of the pioneer projects I did for getting into product management, was to help build Edu Abroad. It's an education platform where they help people get scholarships abroad. I mean, apply for scholarships, put on like opportunities abroad for people.
Right.
What I did was that that project is so dear to me because I had to start from the scratch, right? I had to start from interviewing people, getting to talk to them about what they really want when it comes to getting to know about scholarships abroad. Mm. And then, you know, you do your market research. You're like, okay, so this person is doing it, this person is doing it. What can we do differently, right? And then you just went on to, okay, you now understand what you have to do. For that project, we didn't have a UI UX designer. So you could just like create visuals for the engineers to use. And then from there, you do the testing and see how it works. And then maybe that's the MVP, you roll it out, see how it works, and then you roll it out and fix the bugs. I mean, refine the project and then roll it out again. This project, I'll say it's one of the projects that I got so much mentorship on, because it was a personal project I was working on, and I used to bother my mentors a lot. I don't use the word bother, but yeah, I was always in their DM like, oh, okay, so there's a finding. What can I do? I mean, what best can I do and all that? Yeah, so...
That is amazing. That is amazing. Let's get away from these heavy techie conversations. Yeah. Right? You did say that you like to dance. All right. Okay. So let's talk a bit about your creative side, away from this busy life, this adulting that is adulting. We're all trying to stay afloat.
So much.
What do you do to unplug? What do you do to, you know, stay afloat and not just be caught up in the busyness of life?
Yeah. So the first thing I'd say is spending time with my family, more like my sisters and my brother. And we just get to talk. I mean, sometimes I just talk, laugh things out. And also spending time with friends sometimes. Mm. I mean, once in a while, at least step out. But most importantly, I love to dance to myself. I mean, in my room. But I was like,
what kind of dance? What kind of dance? Is it shoki or is it azuntu or salsa? I don't know.
So the thing is, I've been like, I don't want to say I'm a dancer, but I've been dancing since I could remember. Even
which senior high school did you go to?
I'm St. Rose's senior.
Oh, okay, all right, fair. Were you entertainment perfect?
No. I wasn't. But in university, we had this group called Mass Theater. I was a dance director for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I love to just, I mean, I feel it just brings me, I'm able to just unwind, you know, and it's like I get into my emotions.
Yeah,
for me, it helps a lot. I love, not like I said, not outside, I mean, inside.
when are you taking it outside?
Oh, so once in a while, I try to take it outside, but my room is the main base.
It's the main base. Just you and your mirror and you're good to go.
Yeah, and sometimes my sisters and I.
Oh, that is nice. And I think I like what you say, because clearly you said, even one thing I've taken from you, this conversation, is mentorship is not just like only a one-on-one thing. Definitely. It's a community thing. And I can see where it's coming from. You have a very good relationship with your sisters, your brother. Yeah. So you guys, you know, have time. Exactly. And that is good. That is good. Yeah. I think the more we grow up, the tendency to become overly caught up in a lot of things. Actually, I had a discussion with a very important person in my life about some matters, and I realized that, you know, there are some areas in my life that I'm so zoned on.
Exactly.
It's affecting some other areas of my life.
Yeah.
And I used to fight. I was like, oh, But I was like, you know what? Maybe the person's saying something true, because if you don't take care, you'll be so zoned into that area of your life. Yeah. All other areas in your life will be affected, because what is money? All the money we get.
Loneliness.
Yeah. We've seen it happen several times. People are rich, billionaires, and everything. So me, I like a good balance, a bit of cha-ching, so that we can, you know, travel together, do all those kind of stuff.
But also
be very clear on the fact that there are some things that cannot be bought with money, and sometimes you just have to make the time for them.
Lovely.
Okay, so our tech space is evolving so much. Gen AI, this and that. Everyone feels like their job is at a high risk.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering, I don't know how much of, I don't think product managers are going to be replaced by AI. I do not think so.
Well,
it is, but you never know. Never say never.
Yeah.
But how do you stay up to date with all the things that are currently going on in our industry? Yeah. Do you listen to podcasts, or you watch news, or what do you mostly do?
Yeah, so for news, honestly, I don't think so. But like earlier mentioned, like the tech field is more of a continuous learning field. So that's one thing I also like about the tech field. But for me, I constantly have something I look at, like even in a day, try to learn something. It doesn't have to be anything big, but just try to learn something. What's new? And usually I focus on people on LinkedIn. So when they make posts, you know, you try to learn them. You try to listen to maybe this YouTube talk, like podcast once in a while. But I'm more of, maybe let's just watch a video, let's understand what's happening. Maybe let's take a course, a quick course. I don't like long courses. It can be draining. But definitely that's how I stay up to date with myself. And I love my company for that, because of the career development it provides. You know, have lots of courses that you need to do. And one thing that I also do to help me stay ahead is pushing myself to do hard things at work, because it will push me to go and study that particular thing, right? So recently we had to do some cloud related thing, and I have cloud background, but I had to go, and it was more like intense, so I had to sit down and figure it out what we needed to do.
Okay. As a woman in tech, it's very obvious that the tech space is male-dominated, and things are being done every now and then to, you know, make it easy for women to get into tech. Yeah. There's been a lot of, you know, great groups like Developers in Vogue. You've heard a lot of them, and women in code, or Because She Can. I've seen a lot of people coming up here and there. What would you say is, like, you being a woman in tech, how would you say the current space is like, especially in Ghana?
Right. I'll say that in Ghana, for Ghana, I think we are getting there. We are not there yet, especially in Ghana, because you find people in tech, that's fine. But I don't know if we are still at the 50-50 ratio. But globally, I'd say that I love the pull from organizations and the push, what they are trying to do to get more people or more women into tech. We are getting there. We are not there yet. I think it's good progress so far. Looking at when I even started till now, it's a short time, but you can see that we now have like a lot of people, like Because She Can, She Code Africa. I mean, these are like women-centered groups that are really pushing the barrier for people.
That is amazing. I like to ask my guests this question because it gets them to really reflect a lot. It's one of my favorite questions, I think, so far. If you could do something differently, looking back on your journey, I had one guy on my podcast. He says if it was up to him, he wouldn't have read an LLB. He would have just gone straight into product management because he pivoted fully from law into product management. Exactly. And it's like and he just sees it, and he's like, he's not really using his law for anything. So he felt like he's wasted time. But then you realize that he's working in a law firm as a product. So he's now, so it's like, it's beneficial in the long run. But I don't know about you. What is it? If you had the chance to do something differently, what do you think it would be?
So I think I'm similar to the guy. I've told my friend this before. Maybe it was to get a master's. I feel like if I had a chance to do it again, probably want to get a master's. Because I'm not downplaying people that have masters, right? I'm looking at what we have in the system and what you go to school to learn and all that. I feel like maybe I could have just gone straight into tech, right? Or probably taking my time, because you have that thing that, after you do your national service, you have to do a master's. Like, I think it's a societal thing that I was following, that okay, I'm done with national service, so I must do my master's. I mean, once you have the resources, do your master's and all that. But I feel like if I have the chance again, I would be more practical. Let me just put it this way, because I felt like the international affairs of political science were more theoretical. So I would be more practical in my learning and my networking. I mean, if I had started proper networking like I'm doing now, I think by now I'll be the next Bill Gates. Oh. You never know. Definitely.
No limits, no boundaries. When I chanced on your profile, I was looking for people to have on the Pivoting Career series, and I was just using a lot of keywords or something. And then I just chanced on your profile. I was like, okay. Then I looked at it, was like, wow, who is this person who has made this very huge jump? And not only are you doing it, you're doing it well. And I don't know you much, but for the little conversation, before we had this call recording, you said you were shy, but Don't say that anywhere again. Or maybe I made it quite easy for you to feel at home. Fair enough. But in your last words, your final words, what is the best advice you give to anyone who finds themselves at this crossroad, especially having a background like yours? I'm running this series specifically for a lot of friends who have been messaging me. I want to get into tech. I read linguistics and blah, 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 and I want to get into tech. What do I do? So this Pivoting Career series is dedicated to all those questions. So that I stop answering them because I'm tired. But trying to give them a plethora of options to look at people who have done it so that they can listen, take the pointers, and then run with it. So your final words to someone who is having a similar background like yours and trying to pivot.
Right. So I would say the first thing is it's a mindset thing. Okay. So you change your mindset and you go for it. So change your mindset, know what you want to do. Because mindset is important. If you're feeling like you can't do it, you're getting, and then maybe the first month you just give up. Trust me, because it's not easy at all. So change your mindset, and then I'll tell you that find mentors early. Find mentors early, because they help you a lot. Find mentorship early; they help a lot. You can be feeling down, but then sometimes the encouragement you get from your mentor helps. And then the last thing is find people to study with and move with. That's what helped me during my class, because I think we were about 5 people. And what we used to do is that after we are done with the class, we meet up like 11 p.m. or like 10 p.m. to like 2 a.m. just trying to study together. So find people to move with. If you're doing it alone, it will be harder than you thought. Try to find, you can go on LinkedIn. Hi, I want to learn UI UX design. Who would like to help to be like a steady mate? Trust me, you get a lot of people that would want to. So go for what you want and pray hard. Yeah, I forgot it's about that. Pray hard. Pray hard and move. Yeah.
Nana Joa, you are a great personality. I would have not imagined all this, I was looking forward to today's episode, but it was way beyond my expectation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for making it lively.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. But thank you so much for making the time, and looking forward to the next phase of your career, seeing you ascend. And yeah, when I come to Ghana, it'll be very nice to meet up.
Yeah. Sure. Anytime. I'll
be available. Nanajo openly admits that her transition into tech wasn't easy. Having even faced some mental breakdowns, she reminds us that community is very important and there are shoulders you can lean on. Her story of resilience and determination reminds us that pivoting may not be easy, but it is possible. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Techstep Podcast. See you in the next episode.